Let's fucking do it. Let's do ourselves a podcast, guys. Yeah, 16. Oh, Cronenberg.
I got a whole case of these bad boys.
The only beer they have in France for some reason.
Yeah, Cronenberg.
They have a little Calvados with that, and you'll be living my lifestyle, my 2003 Lower East Side lifestyle. I worked at a French restaurant called Les Enfants Terribles. Had a lot of Cronenberg and fucking a lot of Calvados.
Bring the Calva, man.
I'm on water tonight. Hello, everybody, and welcome to this Wreckage Podcast. I'm here with Andy today. And also with two very special guests. One guest, you know him so well by this point. How many times, Henry Wallace, have you been on this show?
I believe 4 times. Salut et fraternité.
Yeah, so this is number 5.
Yeah.
Number 5 with a bullet. You know him from the New International magazine, head editor, is that right?
Founding editor.
I like that. I wanted to get your title correct there. Henry promises, as he's recording from France at like midnight right now, drinking the Cronenbergs, that he's going to bring a chaotic energy to this whole enterprise. But he's not our only guest. We also have Connor Mulhern, who is the lead researcher at the Reactionary International Research Consortium. Those are people that are researching the Reactionary International. He himself is not a reactionary. And he's not, I don't think you're international either, right? You live in the US of A. So welcome, Connor.
Glad to be here. And yes, it's always difficult to explain Reactionary International, a project of Progressive International. One of the most confusing sentences in the English language, but you learn to deal with it.
And we have the two of you guys here today on this podcast on the strength of like a random interaction on X.com, the Everything app. So just when you think that Twitter is gone and X is, it's only just Nazis all the time now, and it's just the hell site where you get underage people and put them in bikinis through Grok or whatever. No, it still has some capacity to bring people together for podcasting. I don't know. That's a dubious distinction, but it does do that. So Connor, Henry, welcome to this podcast. We're going to be talking about the Reactionary International and how to fight it. So Connor, I'm sure you have your ideas on how to fight it. Henry definitely does. So let's begin by talking about what it is, Connor, that your project is about and what this Reactionary International is.
Well, I think at a fundamental level, the project is about investigating and highlighting the connections between various far-right actors around the globe, because as much as the progressive left likes to think of itself as very internationalist, in some ways the far right is far more organized and far more internationalist than we are. They are organizing constantly. If you go look, I'm sure there's about 5 different random CPAC type events in different countries. I think you got an event, the Right Wing Fest, literally called that, down in Argentina coming up this month. And they are constantly organizing and trying to build solidarity. And the goal of the Reactionary International Project is to help highlight these connections so that we can fight them.
Hell yeah. I guess, how long has this project been going on for? Is another question. Go ahead.
So it's been going on for about 2 years now. We soft launched about 3 years ago, and we've been publishing various articles and doing deep dive investigations in the far right for about 2 years, from everybody from Viktor Orban in Hungary to the roots of evangelical Christianity and its role in the far right around the world, and everything from January 6th in the U.S. to January 8th in Brazil.
I've had the fortune over the last 24 hours to take a deep dive into your website, which, of course, we're going to link to everybody in the show description to check out. Very informative. And I was only able to really dip my toe into many of the different cases and investigations that you guys had. But I was particularly taken by your study of Opus Dei, which I was just telling my beautiful wife, I know Opus Dei as like the Dan Brown thing, obviously. Everyone knows about that from that novel that came out, what was that, 25 years ago? They were like the bad guys in it. And I also kind of knew it as like Mel Gibson's father is like really into it, which goes some way to explain why he's such a fucking psychopath. But your research project, Connor, on the website, that deep dive into it, I did not realize how deep it went. They've got schools in Washington, D.C., private schools. They helped to support the original coup against Hugo Chavez in 2002. They basically like ran a bank that's relatively famous. I don't know. Andy, do you remember on Delancey Street, Banco Popular used to exist?
Puerto Rico.
Spain, apparently. And not only that, but it was basically like owned by a Opus Dei front company. And like these like stealthy, scary Opus Dei investors who ran the fucking thing, and it went bankrupt in 2017. But the point is that I think the Opus Dei stuff really shows how powerful your research consortium can be, because my God, I didn't realize how deep this fucking went, man. Wheels within wheels, you know? So what are some of your like headline findings when it comes to these different groups? I'm not just talking about Opus Dei, but you also talk about Hungary and you talk about the gig economy, platform capitalism. What are some of the greatest hits you have for us?
I mean, I think fundamentally we have to understand that these people are well organized and well financed. In some ways, they're not more effective than the left. But I like to think of the best way that these connections form is often through a chance meeting at some conference where two guys go to the side, have a beer, have a conversation, and they figure out how to help out each other. Now, if you're a poor leftist who can maybe organize one global conference per year, if that, there's not a lot of opportunities for these connections to happen. But when you have more money than God and can just constantly throw money at different projects, different ideas, even if 90% of them crash and burn, there is going to be those connections made. They can build that kind of reactionary solidarity, for lack of a better term, and build those connections in order to strengthen those bonds and then use them to fight the left.
Right. And the connection of like, say, a Catholic cult group, which is also like its own intelligence agency and is tied to like the Franco state, like the fascist state in Spain, but also elements within the Vatican too. Like these networks that you research and you point out are extremely international and internationalist, right? It's not just that they have, you know, the ability to move around, to move money and people, and as you said, to have conferences around the world, but also too, they actually have capitalist states behind them, many of them, right?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you can look at essentially the Orbán regime in Hungary at this point as a state that is entirely harvesting its resources towards building this international project. It is spending, I've seen estimates where it's like several percentages of the state's spending are just spent on these conferences, on funding right-wing academics, on doing all this various stuff. They handed over a part of the oil concession to this like college academic type thing to build up right-wingers. Imagine if you would just have essentially the state funding a cadre building right-wing institution. And that's how like Hungary has become at the center of this, because they're just willing to throw money at it in a way that, you know, we just don't have equivalents on the left, as much as they think these left-wingers are all narco-communist trafficking cocaine to fund these projects.
Man, I wish. You know how much reach this podcast would have if we were doing that shit, if we were on those fishing boats?
Man, I want to ask Henry a bit of a side question. What do you think of Opus Dei from a theological point of view, Henry?
Well, first of all, I'm not Roman Catholic. I'm Orthodox Catholic. Second of all, my understanding is the Opus Dei, didn't they get into some trouble with Pope Francis and furthermore with Leo? My understanding was that the Vatican had this like long struggle to try to diminish their power, but they were ingrained, and it's kind of actually, it's sort of awkward because the papacy is supposed to be this like ultimate absolute monarchy structure, But it's actually, it shows the weakness of such a top-down organizing that they can't really, like, the popes can't actually flush shit out.
Yeah, why aren't they obeying the Pope anymore? Isn't that the whole point?
Well, the Pope's not Basado.
Hmm.
But, I mean, they were looking at closing it down under Francis, and they had spent years trying to build this case, build this kind of project, and ultimately Francis died and he got pushed back under the current Pope. It hasn't quite happened yet, but, I mean, Opus Dei is essentially a state within a state within the Vatican, and trying to root that out has been a great difficulty. Hopefully something's going to happen given some of the recent revelations around trafficking people in Argentina, but you know, I mean, essentially in some ways, they're essentially running their own little kind of, not quite Epstein, but just global trafficking network of women. And yet they're able to get away with it just because they have so much institutional power.
You bring up Argentina. I wonder if that Argentine government that they have right now cares that much about human trafficking or child, especially like young girl exploitation. I'm not. Maybe they do. Maybe they don't. I'm feeling like as part of the reactionary international, they might not.
Well, you know, as libertarians, I'm sure they're very much against age of consent laws, but
and they love free labor too, I'm sure. Because that's, like, let's be clear, what the accusations are, and they seem very credible, is that Opus Dei, in, like, true medieval fashion or true cultish fashion, has, like, kind of gradations of initiates, and some of them, excuse me, some of them are, like, supernumeraries, and there's numeraries, and then it's hard to keep track of all this stuff. But then there's a whole, like, subclass of women, right, who do free labor and are celibate. They're not quite nuns. It's not, like, as official as a nunnery, but they do basically, like, all the cooking and cleaning and washing up for these powerful men. Is that the idea?
Yeah, absolutely.
It's interesting to me, and I think this points to something fundamental about capitalism. As I'm reading, not just about Opus Dei, but you know, many of the other cases that you have, including Hungary too. There's a way in which so many different aspects of capitalist society start to look like one another and start to look like rackets, like money laundering, moving people, and young people, moving them across borders, getting like front groups, having like intelligence agencies. Like, this is kind of like gangsterism writ large, you know? And like, what are these, what was the Franco state? What is the Hungarian state? But these political, entrepreneurs essentially like gangsters, right? So would it be fair to call this reactionary international like an international gangster conspiracy or like a racket, something like that?
I mean, in some ways, they're looking basically to divide up the world and have their own little fiefs each. Their solidarity is, in some senses, just allowing it's against the post-war international order. It's about deconstructing what rules, however rarely they are enforced, however ineffectively they are enforced. They're about getting rid of those rules so that way you can kick out all non-white people out of your country or run essentially a gangster capitalist empire and enrich yourselves. It's about dismantling those post-war institutional orders so that way you can enrich yourself.
Hungary is fascinating, right? Because reading your case file on Hungary and the Fidesz Party, is that how it's pronounced?
Yeah.
Fidesz
Party. Yeah.
I don't speak Hungarian. In fact, the language, it's a language I isolate, and I find it kind of creepy, to be honest. Sorry to all you Magyars out there who are listening in the audience.
Sorry, Lukács.
I went out when I was in the hospital. Anyway, I'm not going to tell that story. I got like really angry at Hungarians, but that's just something I do. Orban, right, kind of always was an international right winger, it seems, from what I read on your website, in that he gets his original money in the, you know, when the Warsaw Pact falls apart, when Hungary has its transition to capitalism, right? You have all sorts of money flying around. You got George Soros, who's funding young Viktor Orban and others. You also have groups like it's the IRI, the International Republican Institute, I think it's called.
Yes, it's part of the National Endowment of Democracy. It's one of its kind of subgroups.
Right. Like it's like an NED thing in order to promote politics that are reminiscent of the Republican Party in the United States. Right. Mm-hmm. As I understand it.
Absolutely. Yeah.
And its board of directors is like Lindsey Graham and Mitt Romney and like a bunch of fucking ghouls. I had the misfortune of going onto the website. I was like, oh, my God, these people are fucking terrible. But the point is like for all his talk of being against globalism, for all his talk of national sovereignty and making the Hungarian nation state strong, closing the borders, traditional families, whatever, nationalism, he's kind of always been an international figure, right? He's always had these ties to sort of international. And now it's kind of redounding back. He's this placeholder that the rest of the kind of new reactionary right seems to be forming around, right?
Yeah, I mean, in some ways, I would describe Viktor Orban as an American Republican politician, an effective one, even if you disagree with his politics, a very good one at his job, who's been placed in a political context where there just hasn't been that kind of ruthless American style campaigning and sensibility in terms of winning at all costs. That is how Viktor Orban, in some ways, his very close friend, Benjamin Netanyahu, have dominated their political scenes of their countries for so long, is they are very willing to use every dirty trick that they learn from the U.S. and implementing them in a political context where there just hasn't been that amount of sort of just ruthless, cutthroat campaigning, and that's how they've built their power.
And now they have CPAC conventions with Jack Posobiec, whoever the fuck that guy's name is, in Hungary, right? They had one a couple of years ago.
Well, they got one coming up a couple weeks, honestly.
Oh, nice. I can't wait. I'll be there with fucking bells on. Henry, let's give you an opportunity to respond here because you're living in a belly of a beast known as France. You guys have your own reaction there. It's called what? Now it's called the National Assembly or National Rally?
National Rally.
What do you think of all this this international stuff? What's the relation between what you're seeing on the ground and then like larger things happening in Europe and beyond?
Yeah, so what I would say about this is that we are currently living through a pivotal moment in which I would argue it is a time of clarification generally. Like 2024, 2025, 2026, 2027 overall is a time of clarification. Where I think you and Andy, you know, you've been podcasting for a long time. You've been witnessing events for a long time. I think about like 2016, 17, 18, 19, the immediate pre-COVID period. Mm-hmm. There was a lot of political confusionism just generally. You know, like there was a lot of wiggle room, a lot of sort of obscurity with people's politics. And I think as the stakes have been ratcheted up, the basic contradictions and tensions and inconsistencies have been laid bare, such that, for example, the National Rally today in France is being exposed as just as feckless and servile towards the United States as the center or the center right or center left. And really only the radical left has an honest, as we say in French, a souverainist ability to say, like, we should actually leave NATO. Mm-hmm. We should push back on Trump. We should not be bullied. And like, look at the Danes. I don't mean to insult them, but Trump is basically saying like, I'm going to fuck you. I'm going to like take your shit. And they're like, we're your good ally.
That it's interesting
over and over again.